Thanks for joining us today at Springwell Church, where we want to draw spiritually thirsty people to Jesus by loving God, loving each other, and loving the world. We hope that today's message builds you up, gives you a little insight, and helps you find a brand new perspective. You can find us in Taylor, South Carolina, and online at springwell.org. That's springwell.org. Now let's jump into the message.
I got great news for you. I said I have great news for you. God is a God of new beginnings. Yesterday's gone. What happened yesterday is gone. And with every sunrise, there is the hope of a brand new day, you know? Maybe that's why I love to see the sunrise as much as I do. And every day it seems to be different for me, and you've heard me say this so many times, and in the beauty and the wonder of a sunrise, and I'm able to say, you know what, this is a brand new day. You know, what happened yesterday is gone. I can't go back and change what happened yesterday, but I can today have a brand new start. I can have a brand new beginning, maybe even to go back and, you know what, change some things that I regret that I did yesterday. It represents a brand new beginning. And to embrace the new and to let go of the old, you just need two things. You just need two things. The first thing that you need, are you ready? If you're taking notes, the first thing you need is a problem. That ought to be easy, right? Everybody probably in this place has some kind of problem. In fact, if you don't have a problem, there are some of us that have multiple problems that we would be willing to share with you. And so, you know, we can share some of our stuff with you. If, you know, life is just really, really sweet for you, hang out with us for a little bit, and we'd like to burden you with some of our problems. You know, the reason that some of you came today, let's be honest, is because you have some problems. The reason that you showed up today is that there are some issues in your life. There's some things that you've been struggling with that you can't fix. And I've said this for many, many years. When people show up at church on a Sunday morning, you're desperate. And so maybe some of you walked into this place this morning with some problems you can't fix and a future for you that looks a little bit bleak, and maybe you've lost a little bit of hope. And so what you hope for today, what you're trusting in today, is that something's going to be said. God's going to show up and he's going to give you that thing which you're lacking, hope. First thing you need is a problem. The second thing that you need is a purpose. And maybe that's your problem. Maybe your problem is that you don't feel like you have a purpose. And when I say a purpose, if you've been in the church world, you know, at all, at least years ago, we used to talk about a call. And a call seemed to be that specific thing that only came to a select group of men or women that were called to do a particular thing. We were called to preach. That's what we used to say back in the day. I don't know that many people said that I've been called to sing. It seemed like it all revolved around this call, and the call was to preach, but there's more to it than that. See, every single person that I've ever met, at least I believe, that what they're looking for is more than a call. They're looking for a purpose. I need to know that I'm not just taking up space on planet Earth. I want to know that God could possibly use somebody maybe like me to make a difference. I just want to know that my life matters. In 1666, a terrible fire swept through London. And it was the kind of fire that just wreaked havoc and left a mess. Buildings were burned. Businesses were burned. Homes were lost. Public buildings were lost. And one of those beautiful buildings that was lost was St. Paul's Cathedral. But after the fire, the people themselves started a huge project to rebuild St. Paul's Cathedral and to help the city recover. And so they hired the famous architect, Christopher Wren. And it was his job to oversee the project. It was his job to make sure that the plans were perfect, to resurrect this beautiful building, this place of hope for the people of that city who had lost hope. So one bright, sunny day, Wren decided to visit the construction site, and upon his arrival, he observed all the hustle and the bustle and workers at work. It was loud, it was noisy, and the air was heavy with dust. And among all of the workers that he noticed, there were three in particular, there were three bricklayers that he noticed. And so he walked over to the first bricklayer, and he said, "Well, what are you doing?" And this first bricklayer, as you can possibly imagine, I mean, in our day, he would have probably said, "Duh." You know, I can just see him probably saying that, but he never even looked up. He said, "Can't you see what I'm doing? I'm laying one brick after the other, after the other, after the other, all day long." And he continued his work. Wren walked over to the second bricklayer and he said, asked the same question, what are you doing? And that bricklayer, with a huge smile on his face and a sense of pride, he said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm building a solid wall." And you could tell by the look on his face, you could tell by the sound of his voice that he took great pride. He said, "I'm building a solid wall, and it's hard work, but I'm telling you, all the hard work is going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it when we're done." So he walked over to the third bricklayer, and he asked the very same question, "Could you please tell me what you're doing?" And this bricklayer stood up. And with a huge smile on his face and a twinkle in his eye, he began to look at the whole construction site, not just the wall that he was building. He said, "I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm building a masterpiece. It's going to be a grand cathedral. This is going to be the kind of thing that's going to give hope to the community. And when everybody looks at this, they're going to be able to see the wonder and the glory and the splendor of God. And building a great cathedral." For one bricklayer, it was a mundane task. For one bricklayer, it was just laying one brick after the other, after the other, after the other, all day long. Only for that day to end and the next day to start, to do the very same mundane task over and over and over and over again. But to another bricklayer, it was more than that. It was more than just a job. It was a call, and it was more than a call. It was a purpose, and his purpose, when he was done, was to be able to give glory to God and hope for people. The same job. Two different perspectives. And my guess is that there's way too many of us that feel like that first bricklayer. So we got to find our purpose. It's interesting. It was interesting preparing for this message. It's a little bit different message for me. And I'm going to take you to the book of Genesis. We're going to look at some verses in chapter 1, then we're going to look at a verse in chapter 2. And I want you just to kind of rest there just for a minute, and we're going to move on. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, "Then God said, 'Let us make human beings in our image to be like us, and they will reign.'" And if you like that word reign, can you say amen? I know y'all aren't really used to that kind of thing, right? "To reign over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, the livestock and all the wild animals on earth and the small animals that scurry along the ground." And this must have been, that's why you can't pass over it too quickly, because two verses later he repeats the same thing. And let me just say, anytime you're in the Bible, you see a word that's repeated over and over and over again, and that means we should be paying close attention to that word. If there's a verse and you see this verse and then a few verses later it's like that same verse is repeated, then you know this is a big deal. Two verses later, verse 28, "Then God blessed him and said, 'Be fruitful and multiply.' And all the men said, Some of y'all even missed that. It was really good. He said, fill the earth and govern it. That's an interesting word. And the word means probably exactly what you think it means. But then he says, to reign over. We're going to reign over. So there's that whole idea of ruling. And if you're wondering, what does the Hebrew word mean? It means to rule over. That's what it means. And so now this is the third time, right? The second time in another verse, reign over the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground. And then we go to chapter 2 and verse 15, and it repeats itself again. And the Lord God took the man and he put him in the Garden of Eden to work it. You like that word? I got nothing. I mean, I didn't even get a grunt from you. I mean, I got nothing. To work it and to take care of it. So the idea here is that God has given to human beings, I wrote this and I argue with myself, I'm going to just read to you what I wrote, the marvelous burden. Can you even put those two words together? Like marvelous and burden, because a burden doesn't always seem to feel marvelous. Am I right? But it is this marvelous burden of being responsible. We've been created to and for work. I felt that. So parents, you can tell your kids that they have been created to be responsible in work. You're welcome. And so, in fact, you know, if you're a parent, what you might want to do is you might want to take those three verses, you might want to write them down on a piece of paper, you might want to maybe open up the Bible, you want to point those out, you want to highlight them, and then maybe you want to say, you know what, you should learn, you should memorize these verses. Even before we get to John 3:16, some of those other really cool verses in the Bible about being more than a conqueror, maybe you should read this to know that you have been created for work. You've been created for responsibility. I can just tell y'all aren't having a good time at all. But maybe there's somebody that said, wow, like this is awesome. I love to dominate. Like I believe that I've been created to be large and in charge, right? And so I wanted to go back and do a word study, and I did do a word study. I looked at those Hebrews words, and I kept thinking, there'll be something different here, you know? I mean, like, maybe one verse it means this, but this verse, it'll mean something else. And it literally does mean to dominate. It means to rule. But don't miss the point. It isn't to dominate in the sense that we think it does. It doesn't mean to rule over in the sense that we think it does. It's not talking about positional authority here. It's not talking about lording over someone, telling other people what to do, to be large and in charge, to think that maybe you're more important than anyone else. What it means is that we've been given the wonderful responsibility of caring for. And that changes the whole perspective. So that we're supposed to take care of the earth. You're probably thinking, are you a tree hugger? Like, I would have never said that about me, but I'm telling you, the more I think about it, the more that I see of how we as irresponsible humans, and when I look at what we've done to the earth, it breaks my heart. It really does. And I don't know that I would consider myself to be a tree hugger, but I do love the earth, and I do think that it's our responsibility to take care of it. But beyond that, it's also our responsibility to care for others. Is it to lord over them? Is it to dominate them? Is it to rule over them? And with some kind of positional authority to be able to tell them what to do? Absolutely not. It means to care for deeply. I know, if I'm gut level honest, way too many pastors over the years that have looked at their role as a pastor as only to dominate and to rule. and to tell people what to do. I'm the senior pastor, which here just means I'm old. But with that responsibility of being a shepherd, right, Jonathan? There comes this wonderful responsibility, sometimes a heavy burden, that says that my job is to love you and to love you well. I'm just saying that we all need a purpose. And God from the very beginning gave man a purpose. And I wrote this, I'm going to argue with myself just a smidge. I wrote this, and it always requires some kind of problem to be solved. Now, I have to admit that for most of my life, if all my problems were solved, I thought that's when I'd be the happiest, right? Maybe some of you are there now, and maybe you're in a season, and it's a difficult season, and as you're trying to, you know, kind of make it through the season, maybe what you're thinking is on the other side is where there's going to be some joy. Maybe on the other side is where there's going to be some happiness. And I will admit, I don't know that I've ever had a season in my life when I've had absolutely no problems. It seems like there's always been a challenge. There's always been something in front of me. There's always been something there. But I will tell you this, is that when I've had the greatest struggles, when I've had the greatest problems, when there's been the greatest things in my life to figure out, then I've had the greatest motivation. And I felt like then that my life meant something, that I was created for something. That I wasn't just created to sleep late. I wasn't just created to enjoy all of the blessings of God, but I was created for more than that. The truth is, I think you need a problem to find your purpose. There's a great book that's been written called Being Mortal, written by a guy by the name of Atul Gawande. And the book confronts the medicalization of aging and death while advocating for a more humane and holistic approach to this stage of life. Got that right off the internet. But there's this story in chapter 5 in this book that I really think just illustrates, I think it's a great example of just how much can come out of a problem. That a purpose, your purpose, can be birthed by maybe your circumstance, even the circumstance that you're dealing with right now. In 1991, in a tiny town of New Berlin in upstate New York, a young physician, a guy by the name of Bill Thomas, he performed a really cool experiment. And the thing of it is that he was young, he was just less than 2 years out of residency. So he's wet behind the ears. He really doesn't know what he's doing. He didn't know what he was doing with this experiment, but he was willing to try. He was 31 years old. And he had taken this brand new job as the medical director of Chase Memorial Nursing Home. And this facility, you need to know, it's important, had 80 aging adults, 80. Half of those 80 were physically disabled, half of them. So nearly 40 of the 80 struggled just to be able to get around physically. Four out of five struggled with diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia. Can you imagine what that place must have felt like? The staff at Chase saw nothing especially problematic about the care that was being given. But you see, Thomas came in, he was young. He didn't know any better. And so he walks into this place with brand new eyes. And so what he does, he looks around and he sees some things that in fact he does believe is very much problematic. What he saw was people living in despair, and he said, you know what, I got to fix this. So he's a young doctor, and he said, you know what, I'm going to fix this the way any doctor would fix it. And so he started to run tests and have scans, and he started to do physical examinations, and he started to change their medications. He says, you know, the medications that you're on are all wrong, and we're going to change medications. And it was running all of these tests, and a few weeks later, the only thing that he had accomplished was to run medical bills up. So the director of the nursing home came to him and said, stop it. You're not doing yourself any good. Nothing's changed. We still have 40 of these patients that are physically disabled, and we still have 4 out of 5 that struggle with cognitive ability. Stop it. So Thomas came up with a new idea that he proposed to the management. And his aim was to attack what he termed as the 3 plagues of nursing home existence. Here they are: boredom, loneliness, and helplessness. 1991, this young doctor looks at a nursing home and he says, these are the 3 plagues that everyone seems to be struggling with. And you know what I thought? As soon as I read that, I went, wait a minute, hang on. That sounds like what I hear from parents of teenagers today, that they feel helpless, they feel all alone, that nothing has really changed. And how many teenagers have you heard say, well, I'm just bored, I'm bored. To which most of us as adults would say, get a job. You were created for work. When I looked at that, what was interesting to me was it doesn't seem like it's just a plague, 3 plagues that were isolated to a nursing home in 1991 in upstate New York. That's the kind of stuff that we still deal with. So he believed that the way to deal with these 3 plagues was to bring some life. And so they'd put green plants in every room. They'd tear up the lawn and they would create a vegetable garden and a flower garden. And they'd bring in animals. But animals could be a little bit tricky, right? You got to be careful with animals, like in a nursing home. I mean, they could bring in, you know, there were safety issues. There was disease, all these weird things. But at that time, nursing home regulations in New York permitted 1 dog or 1 cat. One dog or 1 cat. And so Halbert, who was the admin person in the hospital, he told Thomas, he said, well, you know what? We've tried this several times. We've brought in dogs on multiple occasions. And we got to be honest, it never worked. We had no success. But you know what? I'd be willing to try it again. Thomas said, how about 2 dogs? Well, we can't bring in 2 dogs. According to Halbert, he said, you know what, the code doesn't allow that. He said, well, just for argument's sake, let's just put down 2 dogs on the paper. Well, the health department is never going to go for it. And he thought about it for a minute, and he said, okay, all right, fine. I'll put down 2 dogs. He said, now how about cats? He said, what about cats? He said, well, some people are really weird. I like to rest there just for a second. And not everybody are dog lovers. There's some weird people out there that like cats. And so I think we should bring in some cats. He said, cats, man, are you kidding me? I mean, but he said, for discussion purposes, what if we were to bring in 1 dog and 2 cats, which I think is totally out of line, should have been 5 dogs and no cats. He said, and there are 2 floors. There are 2 floors, so 2 dogs and 4 cats for the 2 floors. Halbert said, I mean, the health department's not going to go for this. But okay, put it down. Just for the sake of argument, just put that down. And then Thomas looked at Halbert and he said, well, what about birds? And he said, man, are you kidding me? Birds? I mean, the code clearly, anybody ever had a bird? My mom had a bird. His name was Frankie. That was the nastiest bird I have ever seen in all my life. And when I read the story, that's exactly what I thought of. I thought of Frankie, and I thought, you can't put birds in a nursing home. It'll wreak havoc. And so Halbert said, there's absolutely no way they're going to go for birds. Thomas said, come here. He walked over to a window. He said, I want you to look outside, and I want you to think that this is January or February. It's cold outside. There are no leaves on the trees. It's desolate. It's cold. And I want you to think in terms that it's desolate and it's cold, frigid cold, and there's 3 feet of snow on the ground. Now close your eyes, and I want you to tell me, what sounds do you hear in the nursing home? So Halbert did exactly what he was asked, and he said, well, I hear residents moaning. He said, I hear some laughter. There are televisions that are on in different areas, and maybe they're a little louder. There's a little more going on with the TVs than we would like. He said, every now and again, I'll hear an announcement over the PA. And I definitely hear conversations going on between staff members. So Thomas said, then let's create sounds of positive life. Because what you're hearing is not anything that's positive. It's not life at all. So let's put in 100 birds in the nursing home to create this wonderful sound of life. He said, 100 birds? You've lost your mind. I mean, we went from 2 dogs, 4 cats to 100 birds. The health department is never going to go for this. He said, let's, just for the sake of argument, can we just put it down on paper? He said, have you ever lived in a house with 2 dogs, 4 cats, and 100 birds? He said, no, but it would be interesting, wouldn't it? So they ordered 100 parakeets to be delivered on the same day. And when the driver got there, the bird cages had not been delivered. And so the driver, he's a man with a purpose. Y'all with me? And so he had to do something with those 100 birds. And so he opened up the door to the beauty salon that was located on the first floor. He put all of those birds in that beauty salon, and he shut the door and he left. Now the cages did arrive. They were delivered. They came later that afternoon, but they weren't put together. They were in a flat box. And so it was total chaos for a while. And so they had these multiple problems that all had to be fixed. Something had to be done. And to solve those multiple problems, like how to feed the animals. How are we going to do that? I love this. So they took an old medication cart, from a decommissioned psychiatric hospital, and they turned it into what they called the Birdmobile. And so the Birdmobile was loaded with bird seed and dog treats. And I don't know what you do for cats. I mean, I really don't know what you do for cats. Is there anything called a cat treat for those of you? There shouldn't be. I'm just having a cat eat no treat. Anyway, they loaded up this decommissioned medication cart, and they transformed it. It had newspaper on as liners for the bird cages. You can imagine the mess. Thomas said this. He said, there was something beautifully subversive about using a medication cart that had once dispensed metric tons of Thorazine to hand out milk bones. He said people gradually started to accept that filling the nursing home was everybody's task. It was everybody's responsibility. And so the residents begin to wake up and they begin to come to life. And Thomas said, I read this as a quote, he said, people who we had believed weren't able to speak, they started speaking. People who had become completely withdrawn and non-ambulatory started to come to the nurse's station saying, I'd love to take the dog for a walk. I don't want the cat, but I'd love to take the dog for a walk. That's not in there. I just feel like it should have been. We would love to take the dog for a walk. And this place began to be radically transformed. You see, even those 80 patients started to take responsibility. And Halbert said that, much to his surprise, the light started to come on in the eyes of the people. The inhabitants of Chase Nursing Home now included 100 parakeets, 4 dogs, 2 cats, plus a colony of rabbits and a flock of laying hens. It's like a farm. There were hundreds of indoor plants, and there was a thriving vegetable garden and a flower garden. The home had an on-site childcare for the staff and a new after-school program. It's crazy. Researchers studied the effects of this program over 2 years, comparing a variety of measures of Chase's residents with those of residents of other nursing homes nearby. Here's what they found. The staff found that the number of prescriptions required per residence fell to half of that of the contrasting nursing home. Did you get that? I think you missed it. Could having a purpose be so valuable and important to aging people that maybe society has forgotten about anyway? That to feed a bird, and they didn't just feed the bird, they named the birds. Every single patient, every resident had a bird, and they named the bird. Total drug costs fell to just 38% of the comparison facility. The death rate fell 15%. The study couldn't say why, but Thomas thought that he could. He said, I believe that the difference in the death rates can be traced to the fundamental human need for a reason to live. And there is a reason that Genesis reads the way that it does. Is that God made us for a purpose in Psalm 139, that we were handcrafted by God Himself. And when He handcrafted us, He created us with a purpose in mind. A work, not just a job, not just a meaningless job, but to give us a purpose, a reason to live, to know that we're not just taking up space on planet Earth, but that we've been created for a reason and for a purpose, to matter. God made you for a purpose, and often that purpose will be birthed through a problem. God, I'm a mess this morning. Did you know that the reason that you're here this morning was birthed out of a problem? You see, when I was a teenager, I was very angry at God. My dad died when I was 10. I didn't want to have anything to do with God. I didn't want to have anything to do with the church. But at 19, God began to stir in me. And so on occasion, not like every Sunday, and I wasn't going to all services at the church, but occasionally on a Sunday morning, I would show up at church. And I'm not proud of this, and it's the truth, and maybe I shouldn't share it, and maybe y'all will tell me, and I won't tell the second service. I've been to church on a Sunday morning staggering drunk. And in all my time, in those years when I was searching, nobody told me about Jesus. I realized I was rough. I know I was rough. And I can't imagine what people must have thought that day when I showed up drunk. I mean, I reeked of alcohol in the bar the night before, and I can imagine that people wanted to steer clear of me. And what you have to understand was I didn't feel wanted, and I didn't feel needed, and I didn't know that God could possibly love somebody like me. And I certainly didn't believe that God could have a purpose for somebody like me. And so he called me into this thing called ministry. And for years, I did church differently. And without going through a lot of detail, I felt so compelled to leave that traditional setting and to do something different. Because what I saw was there was a problem. There was a problem of people like me that didn't feel loved or wanted. And so you may not even realize this, especially if you're like a first-time visitor, but everything that we do here, everything that we do, I shared with a guy this week, I said, we can tell you the reason that we do everything. Lights and sound, that's not to be cool, it's to create a moment. It's not about theatrics, it's not about that. We were created in the image of a creator God, and I can't create a sunset, I can't create a sunrise, but what we can through lights and sound is to create a moment where you can come face to face with God, and so that you can know that God is crazy about you. I don't care what you've done, and I don't care what you've been. I don't know what your reputation is. But that God is crazy about you, and what he longs for is to be in a relationship with you. The Bible is unbelievably clear that we've all sinned. We've fallen short of God's perfection. You know what's amazing about our sin problem? Is that our greatest problem, sin, points us to our greatest need, and that is to be in a relationship with God. Ah, it's crazy, isn't it? God's crazy about you, and he loves you so much that he said, I'm going to do everything necessary to make this relationship possible. And so God sent his one and only son, and his one and only son willingly went to the cross, and on the cross he died. He shed his blood for the remission of sin. It's a big fancy word. What does it mean? It means that on the cross Jesus paid our sin debt. That's what it means. A price had to be paid. Jesus said, I'll pay it. On the third day he was raised from the dead, and because he has power over death, hell, and the grave, what he wants to do is step into your life with that same resurrection power and give you a purpose. God didn't create no junk when he created you. He created your own purpose, for a purpose, to matter. If you're here this morning, you're not a follower of Jesus, what are you waiting on? Aren't you ready to find your purpose? Every head is bowed and every eye is closed, no one's looking around. Maybe right there you would say, wow, God, I do have a sin problem. And I want to bring my biggest sin problem. I want to bring my biggest problem of life to you. And it's hard for me to believe. It's hard for me to wrap my brain around your love and you love me that much, that you would go through all that you went through just to make this relationship possible. But I'm going to accept that truth and I'm going to embrace that truth. And I believe that you're alive. You didn't just die and they didn't just put you in a tomb, but you're alive. To the best of my ability, I'm asking you to forgive me of all my sin, and I'm going to fully surrender my life to you. Thank you for your love. Everybody look this way. Some of you, as followers of Jesus, maybe you walked in here this morning with some struggles. And I'll tell you what I've learned in life, that those greatest struggles, sometimes our greatest problems, are the very things that God intends for us to use in our lives to make a difference in other people. Sometimes going through what you're going through is going to enable you. You'll be the only person that will be able to speak into somebody else's life the way that you can, because you can look at them and say, I've been there, I've done that. I've had that experience. Let me tell you how God walked me through it. No matter what you're going through, as a child of God, ask God, not why are you doing this, but help me to see the what. What's the purpose? And how will you use this in my life to speak life into other people's lives? Lord, wow, Lord. I've just been an emotional mess this morning, Lord. I pray that you've been able to take some of that brokenness, Lord, and speak truth to bring radical change, to give people that were hopeless hope. I love you. And I'm so grateful that you love me. It's in your name I pray.